Hello everyone again and welcome to the Pacers podcast, Australia's only NBA podcast with a bias towards our beloved Indiana Pacers. My name's Adam, I'm your host today and I'm joined once again by Alex.
Yeah, great to be here and very exciting episode for this one, number three.
And Justin.
Hey guys, yeah, very excited for another episode. Let's get things started.
Yeah, you guys referred to an exciting episode. We do have our very first guest coming up on this episode, Tyson Beck. You may know Tyson as a graphic designer for the NBA, for a lot of Australian sports as well, professional sports across the states. He's been active as a graphic designer for many years now. He's done work for many all-stars and past and present players as well. So really interesting insight. Really enjoyed the discussion. Alex, as a graphic designer yourself, I'm sure you got a lot from it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's the best of the best. He sets the trends and, you know, what he had to say was definitely fantastic. Even if you're not a graphic designer, I think you can take that into different industries as well.
And full disclaimer, we do have one of his family members on the podcast, so that's obviously a big help in getting his time. So, Justin, what was it like being the brother of the very famous Tyson Beck? I'm sure you love it when people refer to him as that.
I found it very weird interviewing my brother, but I'll always remember one time I was in a shopping mall in Adelaide with him and some 8-year-old kid ran up to him and said, "Oh my God, are you Tyson Beck?" And I was just like, "What the hell?" So yeah, it's quite surreal, but yeah, he's done very well for himself.
Awesome. Before we get to the interview with Tyson, which please stick around for, it's definitely worth the wait. We'll talk about the World Cup. Obviously, heartbreaking for the Boomers on Friday night against Spain, losing in double overtime, 22 turnovers. I think it's been well documented that the Boomers had their eyes on a gold medal in this World Cup, had their eyes on the World Championship, and it was the very best opportunity that the Boomers had to be able to win the World Championship title. Justin, how did you see the loss? What are your reactions?
Yeah, I'm devastated. I know our Twitter group was blowing up. You know, between the three of us, we were all live tweeting the game. And I've got a lot of thoughts on the game. You know, I'm proud they got this far, but to end the way they did was so disappointing. You know, Paddy missed that big free throw. Bogut missed that rebound. So many one percenters that if they just grabbed onto any of them, they would have won the game and then they'd be playing for the gold. I will just mention as well, I didn't like the look of the Boomers the way they lost. It came a bit across as a bit of a sore loser there. You've got Boga after the game calling out Spain and FIBA and calling them bleeping cheats. You know, the refereeing wasn't great, but to say Boomers didn't have their chances would be a lie.
It's not the first time the referee's been substandard in this tournament earlier. I mean, we saw a game earlier that caused between France and Lithuania where a call was made, and that caused all those referees to miss out on refereeing any further games in the World Cup. So wow. That was brought to light by Pacers Twitter favourite Caitlin Cooper, who was reporting on Domas Sabonis's stats and mentioned the blown call, and all of a sudden FIBA came out and suspended the referees for the tournament.
Yeah, wow, I didn't actually know that. Yeah, because that was a Gobert tap, wasn't it, for like an offensive rebound, I think, or something like that. But yeah, wow.
Yeah, so it was obviously a pretty dramatic loss. Obviously, the Boomers will play France in the bronze medal game just prior to us recording this. They're playing around 2 hours after recording this podcast. So it'll be interesting to see if we can get away with a medal. Hopefully, that bitter, sore loser sort of attitude that we saw from a couple of the guys doesn't permeate through the team and affect our ability to win our very first World Championships medal. Alex, how did you see the game?
Yeah, like you guys hit the nail on the head with the turnovers. I think at the end of the day, the refs, you know, they're going to make bad calls no matter what. They make them both ways. But you turn the ball over 22 times, you're not going to win many games, especially against one of the world's best teams in Spain. You know, I'm still proud of the team, but I think turnovers is a massive issue, especially for a group of guys that's been together. I mean, if you see USA turning the ball over that much, it's understandable. It's a new group, new coach, but this Boomers team's been together too long to make those kind of mistakes. So that was really disappointing.
We also, obviously, Miles Turner had a couple of extra games following the US's quarterfinal loss. The game yesterday against Poland, he ended up with 7 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 block shots, including a aptly named smothered chicken. The game against Serbia, the loss, he had 10 points, 5 rebounds, 2 blocks. So, you know, his rebounds have dropped off from where they were at the start of the tournament. His block shots have maintained, which is just what Miles does, and his points are around that sort of 10 points a game mark. So I'd say he's probably regressed slightly in rebounds, but he did come up against a really good rebounding team in Serbia with a couple of great big men. So can't be too disappointed with his tournament. He did show some flashes of the starting centre that the Pacers need this coming season, Justin.
Yeah, and selfishly, I'm glad it's over for the USA. Just thinking about Miles' travel, he's gone to Australia, he's gone to Shanghai, then Pacers have preseason in India. You know, training camp starts in 2 weeks. You know, we got to get him right for the season. So it's probably good. It's, you know, he can now start focusing on the Pacers and what we have upcoming this season.
Is there a fair chance, Alex, that Miles doesn't actually go to India?
No, I think he would definitely go. He was on a podcast, actually, I think it was yesterday, and he mentioned the team, he's going to go back to Indiana, then he's going to go to India. So I think he will definitely go on that trip. I mean, I personally probably don't think he should. It's pretty risky, especially considering, as Justin mentioned, he's been to 3 countries. So I would probably leave him in Indiana, but I can understand why they want him to go over there. It's a new team, build chemistry, it makes sense.
Yeah, as long as I think he gets the minutes restriction that should be afforded to a guy that just played a World Cup and all of the lead-up games and started, obviously, every World Cup game that the US participated in. I think as long as they can manage that properly, then we won't have any issues. I'd say that the Pacers know exactly what they're doing in that regard, so no real concerns. But you mentioned, Justin, that preseason or training camp's coming up in 2 weeks' time. So it'll be really interesting to see how the guys develop together as a team. And one way to do that is obviously an overseas trip together. So being in India together and being able to be together for a couple of or for a week of training camp where you're not with necessarily with your family could pay immediate dividends for us early in the season.
Yeah, definitely with such a, you know, bunch of new guys. You know, these guys are all coming together for the first time. Like Miles is the longest tenured Pacer, which is just crazy to think about. I think it's really good. This is the exciting time of the year. We're starting to build, you know, where it's about 35, 36 days left until the season starts. You know, training camp's going to be in a few weeks. They're going to have media day, all their photos. This is where, you know, you can start getting excited about the season and see this team hopefully gel in the preseason.
We're bound to see some outlandish predictions over the next few weeks with all teams, but obviously the Pacers will be one of those. There'll be a few local writers that come out and say that they should be favourites or they should be top 2 or 3 in the East. I think we all come down that they should be in the top 4, and where they are in that top 4 will depend on how quickly Victor Oladipo can get back on the floor. But once again, as we talked about last week, we are always competitive. You can always rely on the Pacers to be around that late 40s, early 50s in wins, and this season should be no exception. Moving on to our SI Top 100 that came out, Sports Illustrated came through with their Top 100 players. We did have some Pacers players represented, Alex. I know that you've been tracking that pretty closely and pretty salty on a couple of the placings, as I think we all are.
Yeah, I'm far more than salty on a fair few of these. Sabonis being at 76, Brogdon at 61, and then Turner 47 and Oladipo at 39. I mean, Victor Oladipo being at 39, he's coming off an injury. He's going to miss some of the season. That's not really what I have the issue with. But you know we don't like Ricky Rubio on this podcast if you've listened to the first two, but him being above Sabonis, 3 spots above Sabonis, definitely ruffled my feathers. And I'd rather not talk about that one, to be honest.
It's pretty clear that we'll be cheering for former Pacer Luis Scola's Argentina team in the gold medal game as opposed 100%. To Ricky Rubio's Spanish team. But you mentioned that Domas was rated pretty low as well in the 70s. For a guy that contended for that sixth man of the year and most improved player, he was sort of in that top 5 of both. You'd think that he'd get a little bit more respect among his peers.
Yeah, 100%. He's a double-double player off the bench last year. So this is a guy that was putting up insane, you know, starter-level numbers playing second unit minutes. But, you know, I'm pretty sure we talked about it before the show, you know, these kind of lists, they're made so people click on them. They're made so people view them. So guys like Zach LaVine being at 90, even guys like Jimmy Butler being at 11 somehow, you know, these lists are made so people click on them. So we can't really get that mad at it.
Yeah, like you said, Alex, I think Sports Illustrated put these controversial picks out so people speak about them. I've seen some in previous years which are just outlandish, like someone who's watched one season of NBA wouldn't even do the picks they do. The other side to it, it is very hard to do a top 100. If we all did a top 100 here, there'll be three different lists and three different people saying we're all idiots. So it is very tough. I had three players that stood out to me in the whole 100 list that were just remarkable rankings for me, way too high. Rudy Gobert at 14. I cannot see how he's the 14th best player in the league. I understand Defensive Player of the Year. I understand, you know, he anchors Utah's defense. But if you give me the 14th pick to start a team, I'm not selecting Rudy Gobert. And then Al Horford at 18. I can't fathom that. I understand Philadelphia gave him a massive contract, but Al Horford is not the 18th best player in the league. And then you've got Chris Paul being the 21st best player in the league for next season, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. But he's playing with OKC. Essentially, no team wanted to trade for him. I understand he's got a huge contract as well. But those three players, Gobert, Horford, and Chris Paul, I just cannot understand how essentially they've rated those three top 20 players.
Yeah, the analytics crew love Al Horford. I know that there's a lot of fans of Al Horford around the NBA media as well, so I can understand why he would be ranked so high, but I think we're in agreement that it's not necessarily the reflective of how we feel about the guy. We'll get to see him four times this year against the Pacers. So, and it's funny, those are one of the matchups that actually works with Turner and Sabonis, that being Embiid and Horford. It's one of the matchups that match up well both offensively and defensively on those two guys. So it will be really interesting to see how our two big men ranked above 60 work with their two big men ranked in the top 20. And I think one thing I did want to touch on with Miles Turner and Rudy Gobert is that we saw in that US-France game that Rudy, without even really trying, Rudy got in his head. You know, Miles came out beforehand. He said that Gobert was, you know, Defensive Player of the Year to some people, not necessarily to him, according to some. And then we saw Miles play, you know, 10 minutes, lower minute count than he played for the rest of the World Cup. He had three fouls. He was, you know, he hit a three, hit, I think, 5 points in the game. But yeah, just wasn't as effective and clearly had a little bit too much blood rushing to his head to try and win the matchup and try and make a statement versus trying to, you know, outthink Gobert. Because Gobert, for how good he is, obviously being able to block shots, rebound, it all comes from his mind. He's clearly a really intelligent basketball player. So, yeah, Miles obviously didn't do himself any favours in that matchup, but it'd be interesting to see.
That's not in Miles' DNA. I think I messaged you guys during the game that Miles isn't a trash talker. He's not someone who's going to be a Draymond Green who gets someone hyped up and, you know, wants that kind of, you know, fuel going into a matchup. I don't know why Miles said that. I think he'll probably stay low the rest of the year with those type of comments.
Definitely agree. Any final thoughts on the World Cup? Are we convinced that Argentina are going to take out the trophy and Australia with the bronze medal? Is that where we're at?
I sure hope so, I'll tell you that much. I think we've got to talk a little bit about Luis Scola as well. What this man is doing at 39 years old, I can't even believe it. Like, I think he dropped 28-13 against France. We talked about how good Rudy Gobert is and how good they are defensively. He is doing some things that you should not be doing when you're 39. So I'm hoping Argentina can pull it off. We hate Spain. We hate Ricky Rubio. So, and hopefully the Boomers can come out with the bronze as well.
Yeah, my biggest hope is the Boomers come out with the bronze. Obviously, I'm still so disappointed they're not playing for gold, but I think that's a really good thing for the Aussies that we now have expectations for them. As a country, we are upset that they're not vying for gold. And if you said that 10 years ago, you'd probably be shocked. So, yeah, definitely hope the Boomers win. But, yeah, I mean, Boomers and USA are essentially out. So, yeah, I'm not too worried now.
On to Tokyo.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, a full-strength side, maybe Ben Simmons, maybe a different look on offense. There's a lot of promise in Tokyo next year, definitely. All right, guys, I think we'll probably wrap it up there and move to our interview with Tyson Beck. Once again, thanks so much to Tyson for his time, and really enjoyed learning a little bit more about design, about working with the NBA, about freelancing, about the players that he's worked with and the situations he's found himself in. Really worthwhile 20 or 25 minutes with Tyson. So we'll wrap it up there. Justin, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And Alex?
Yeah, thank you very much.
And we'll see you next week on the Pacers Podcast. Welcome back to the Pacers Podcast. We are thrilled to be joined by Australian graphic designer and photographer for the NBA, the AFL, many other sports around the world, Tyson Beck. Tyson, thanks very much for taking the time out today.
Thank you for having me on.
Pleasure. So, questions. We tried to come up with some questions that you haven't been asked before, and we tried to make this interview a bit unique for you. So straight off the bat, I wanted to ask you about the people that you've worked with and worked for over the years. Was there ever a moment that made you sort of take a step back and pinch yourself or ask yourself, is this really happening right now? A conversation or an interaction you've had with a player or an official?
That's a really good question. It's kind of good that you've thrown one off the bat like that. It probably goes back to the start. It was probably receiving like a check in the mail with the Lakers logo on it. Like that was, I guess, it's because now, like where I am now at 30 years old, like nothing's kind of crazy. Like it's just work sort of thing. So I feel like the only crazy moments were when you were young, because you didn't expect things and you just, your wildest dreams, you were like, nah, this isn't the real sort of thing. So it was more so, yeah, I think it was just having that check with a Lakers logo on it and having to go to a bank. And then, yeah, the bank teller, the people at the bank being like, oh, do you play for the Lakers? And you're like, no. Like, I don't play for the Lakers. It's just a check with the Lakers logo on it. And I do a bit of design work for them. So I think that was kind of the craziest moment, just because, yeah, my age and just being on the other side of the world. And that was kind of the start sort of thing for me.
Nice. Alex.
Yeah. G'day, Alex here. And hey. I just want to ask, you know, what you've worked for a ton of clients around the world, but who's the client or company that you haven't worked for yet that you would love to in the future?
Oh man, I think I'd love to do something with Jordan. Like I've done stuff with Nike, but like something with Jordan would be amazing. Not like, well, obviously like Michael Jordan himself would be unreal, but like just Jordan the brand. I think that's such a, like, that's the most iconic basketball brand in the world. And I don't see any other brand surpassing that. So I think to be able to do something with the Jordan brand, that's like bucket list type stuff. So that's probably the one, but haven't been fortunate enough to do anything with Jordan brand, but yeah, maybe one day.
Just building on that, I know that recently you've been lucky enough to design and good enough to design some NBL jerseys here in Australia. Building on the point, you'd like to work for Jordan, would you like to design shoes at some point?
For sure. Well, actually, I'm working with a client right now doing a Jordan shoe, but it's actually not for Jordan. I actually don't really know too much about the specific project, like who's it for, if it's going on sale, whatnot. But essentially, I've just kind of created I've created a shoe, and it's in kind of the production stage now. And it's just a shoe with all like Jordan's career moments on the shoe. So it's like a collage type shoe. I'm not actually physically designing the shoe from scratch. We're basing it on the Jordan 1, and it's just providing a collage artwork on it. So I think that kind of would be more in my space, to kind of add artwork on top of a shoe. It wouldn't, like, my expertise and my skill set, I couldn't build a shoe from scratch sort of thing, like, you know, performance wise and all the aesthetics to it. Like, yeah, that's kind of out of my depth, but I'd love to kind of be able to collaborate more on kind of putting artwork on shoes, bit of sneaker art. But I actually am working on something right now, and hopefully something comes from it. That's kind of pretty cool.
It's awesome. It could be a launching point for you.
Yeah, for sure. I'm hoping it goes well.
Also, just moving into the photography that Adam mentioned earlier, I know you've dabbled a little bit in it at NBA games, but what do you enjoy most about taking photos, and is it something you want to do more in the future?
It's 100% something I want to do more in the future. I've just kind of just bought a new Sony camera, A7R III or something, I think it's called. And I just bought a bunch of lenses, and I'm going to be going to America in November. So I'll be trying to take some more photos and things like that. That's more of a hobby sort of thing. I don't really kind of envision it to be work too much, kind of like build it into my work. But for me, like, photography has always been like a bit of a passion of mine, especially in sports. So I think it's just kind of cool being at like an NBA game on the baseline, taking a few photos. Like, you're that close to the players. It's just kind of like an unreal experience. So it's more so just, yeah, like a passion. And I'm not really sure where to go from there. Like, I'm definitely just kind of a hobbyist type photographer. I'm nothing like a professional.
Cool. It's Justin here. So obviously I know you pretty well. I'm your brother. So I know you were told to quit design as a subject in university. So can you just elaborate on that and why you kind of never gave up?
Yes. Well, it was actually TAFE, not university. Yes, it was at a TAFE here in South Australia. But for me, it's not like it's like a crazy story where it's like so unique to me. It's like that would happen to like hundreds of students, and I think that's the most frustrating thing, because when I kind of got told that at the time, I wasn't like, I was already doing freelance work in America when I was 17 in high school. So when I got told that when I was like 19 at TAFE, like, it didn't matter, because being told that I'll never be a graphic designer, like, I may as well quit, like, I'm hopeless and all that. It's like, well, I'm already getting work, so I can't be that bad. No one in my class is getting work. So I was never upset. It never kind of put me off my path. But the frustrating thing for me is that if you say that to the wrong person, you know, someone that probably isn't as confident in their work or isn't ambitious in their work, they would literally quit and go back and do, you know, go back to their day job or find another career. And I think that's a huge concern. People that are mentors, also people that are university teachers, lecturers, and TAFE lecturers, like, they need to be trying to inspire people to stay in the creative field. It shouldn't be based on, you know, who they like and don't like. You know, if they personally don't like a student, well, you can't just, you know, try and destruct their path to do what they want to do. So I think, you know, hopefully later on, you know, a lot of these old kind of lecturers are kind of filtered out, because I feel like a lot of them aren't up to date today's standards, especially in the, like, the digital space. You know, when studying, we were just given like a Photoshop to dummies and Illustrator for dummies handbook, you know, scan, like, we were learning absolutely nothing. You could find better resources on Google. And I think, yeah, it is a huge concern in the creative field, where most people that I know that are really close with, everyone's self-taught these days. There's no benefit at all to be studying. Outside of the piece of paper at the end, but then when you go for a job, no one wants to see your piece of paper. I've never had to show my piece of paper for any job. They just want to have a look at your portfolio, and you don't need to study to build a portfolio.
Did you send that lecturer a copy of the Lakers check, mate?
Well, no, but like, I'm always been like a, well, it's not like a shy person, but I don't know, like, I don't like to share my successes, or like, I'm not the type of person that would run around and go like, oh my God, like, look at, you know, Kobe liked my photo or something like that. I would just kind of like keep it aside sort of thing or whatever. But so when I was getting work and stuff, I was literally, so this is actually what happened. So this is how it all started at TAFE, where it's like, I was in, I think it was like an Adelaide magazine or something, did like an article about me, and they had a photo and a bunch of my freelance work in there. And I didn't want any of my classmates to see it. So I didn't like mention it, say anything, but someone picked it up from the newspaper. They brought it into class and they showed everyone in the class, going like, oh, hey, look, Tyson's in a magazine. Like, it's about his design work. The lecturer grabbed it off the student, saw it, and said, who cares? I've been on Oprah before. And it was like, what the hell? And then everyone's like, why have you been on Oprah? And he was on Oprah. He actually then diverted the attention away from me being in a magazine about my design work to him being on an Oprah show. And then we were on a lunch break and he pulled us all back to his class and showed us the episode of Oprah. So, yeah, that kind of, that was a bit like, what the hell? Like when, yeah, it was a bit like me sort of thing, wanted the attention away from me to him. But I haven't spoken to him since, but I've actually bumped into a lot of people, a handful of people around, like if I'm just at events or something around the city or something, that have mentioned that they've had a very similar story with the same lecturers before. So, which is, yeah, again, like I was saying, it is concerned that it's not like a unique thing to me. It's a very commonplace thing, which is unfortunate.
Highly, after that ringing endorsement of the South Australian educational system, we'll move on to something a little lighter. Probably a question you've been asked before, but do you have either a favourite client that you've worked with or design you've produced? I mean, looking over your portfolio, just the sheer number of NBA players you've, you know, had the experience to do designs for is unbelievable, but is there a favourite one?
I'm not too sure. Any client that pays on time is a favourite client of mine. I don't know. I mean, I do enjoy working for the NBA, and I think that was my dream. So I'd have to say the NBA in general. But specific project, I'm honestly not too sure. But maybe I'd just say the NBA.
Continuing with the freelance questions as well. What do you think are the biggest struggles as a freelance artist in today's landscape? And a more contrast to that, what's your favorite part about being a freelance artist as well?
Oh, geez, this could be a long topic. Struggles, there's so many struggles. I think you need to understand your worth sort of thing. So nobody can kind of, you can't kind of set a value on someone else's time. So as long as you know what you're comfortable with.
I'll jump in. I know you get frustrated when other designers do work for free for companies and you say that hurts the industry.
Oh, for sure. That's the biggest thing. Like people online, like I think people were attacking you, Shaquille O'Neal, the other week about trying to find like animators to do like $500, like animate things for $500 and you win a prize. Sorry, only one person wins at $500. Things like that. And people go crazy. They're like, oh, like, you know, we shouldn't be working for free. We shouldn't be working for cheap. Well, it's actually the freelancers and the art, the creative, like we are the problem. It's not the client. It's because we create an expectation. So, you know, if I have a set rate, but then someone else, you know, charges for like, well, like the other year or something, FIBA reached out to me and they're like, oh, you know, can you make this for like $50? And I was just like I can't even like, yeah, like I'm not going to do that for $50. I can't do it. And they were like, oh, well, like the people we work with do it for $50. And it's like, okay, we'll use them sort of thing. But then that creates, so what there is, their expectation is any designer will work for $50. And it's like, well, no, like it, just because someone else does it, it doesn't mean that's kind of what you do. And that's the issue is with people working so cheap and also free, it just creates this expectation that we all do it. And then if you basically, they'll go out and ask, you know, 30, 40, 50 designers and someone's going to cave in. Someone's going to, you know, want free work. And I've seen it recently with the ESPN Australia. They reached out to me. They tried to get me to do social graphics and all that stuff for free. I just said, you know, no. But I also let them know, like, you know, I'm kind of letting you know that you shouldn't be going around asking others. And then, yeah, bang, now seeing that a bunch of it, you know, they're resharing people that obviously be doing it for free. So it is an unfortunate thing, but everyone has to say no to free work and cheap work. It's the only way it's going to change. But I don't think anything else will unless that happens. But outside of money, the other thing is I think there's just so many people now. Like back when I first started, there really wasn't anyone doing this stuff, not so much, especially in Australia. Like we're just like posting wallpapers and signatures and avatars or whatever on forums. there was no social media and stuff. So we were just kind of doing stuff for fun. There was no career path or anything. But now it's like there's hundreds and there's thousands of designers and content creators and all that stuff online that are magnificent. So I think it's definitely it went from a field where, like, if you did good work, you're just going to get work. Like, it would just be so easy, to where now 4 or 5 years ago, I think if you do good work, that's not enough. Like, you could do the most amazing work, but you still might not be able to get work for one reason or another. I wouldn't be able to explain, but yeah, I think it is it's quite a battlefield of people now, options and stuff like that. In terms of the best things about a freelancer, I think, you know, it might be, well, personally, for me, best thing is just being able to work from home, not having to deal with other people's shit. Like, I don't know, it's just like nice not having to walk into work and, you know, being annoyed by someone. You know, it's just you work your own times, work your own hours, hang out with your dogs, hang out with your family. You know, you can work late nights, early mornings or whatever, but it's just all based on, you know, your availability. You know, kind of have to drive into work, dress nice and all that. Like, most days I'm just in a basketball shirt and shorts, and I'd probably put socks on 3 or 4 times a year, so it's pretty casual. I live in slides. I live in Jordan slides. That's pretty much right.
Something interesting you said there, and that you referred to in your question about TAFE was mentorship. And from what you said there, in the design world now, it's changed so much, and it's sort of you've got designers that are potentially working for free, possibly in some cases because they're young and a little bit silly and they don't really know what they're doing yet. How important is it for someone like yourself that's been really successful at it thus far to sort of take a mentorship role, and people in your position to take a mentorship role in design?
Yeah, I think it's big. The other thing is, sometimes when you try and take a mentorship role, you try and, like, you know, advocate for things, and, you know, you can kind of be, like, viewed as, like, some kind of, like, other people might view as, oh, you think you know it all, like, oh, look at you, like, oh, you're an elitist, all that stuff. But, like, all you're trying to do is just better the industry and help people out. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's just an opinion anyway. Like, people can find my opinions wrong, and they think working for free and doing stuff for exposure is a great way to start off. But, I mean, in my regards, even when I was getting no work, I just flat out said no work for free, like no exposure type stuff. Like, oh, obviously I've definitely done stuff for free in my life. I'm not saying, like, you cannot do it, you know.
We're not paying you for this podcast.
Yeah, well, that is very true. So yeah, pick what you want, but I'm just saying, like, every time you do something for free for a client that should be paying you, you're essentially hurting the industry, and that's what it is. So I think mentorships are huge. I think that I feel like a lot of the old cats really don't understand a lot of the industry today, what it is now, like, for, you know, teenagers growing up. I think it's changed so much since when I started, like, so I'm still learning every day. But I do try and, you know, I jump on Twitter a bit and try and talk design and talk kind of the industry a little bit, but I don't get too far into it, just because at the end of the day, it is opinionated, and whatever works for you might not work for someone else. But yeah, I definitely try and help people out, and most of the time I don't help people out publicly, really. It's more so people will send me emails and DMs, and I'll do my best to reply to them. I'll go through as much as I can every week. So it might not view externally that, it might view, people might think I've never helped out anyone, but I would have had hundreds and hundreds of students that have come from America and things like that, that have asked for, like, questionnaires to be filled out, and they're doing this report on a designer for their college study and stuff like that. I've done so many of those that I can just now copy and paste my answers, because all the questions are the same, which is a little bit handy. But yeah, I think it's an industry that a lot of people are trying to crack into, and they might not have the best guidance from where they're studying, possibly. So yeah, mentorships are quite important.
Yeah, cool. We thought we'd wrap it up and give you a little NBA question. So it's not all about design. Obviously, we all know you're a big Lakers fan. So you're a massive enemy on this show. But we thought we'd get your opinion on on LeBron. So what's his legacy in LA going to be? So obviously, you know, Kobe passed his torch once he retired to LeBron. So how do you think LeBron's going to be remembered if, you know, A, he does bring a title to the Lakers, or B, if he doesn't?
Well, it's interesting now. I think it's totally changed now that they've traded away their young core. So I feel like if they never won a championship with LeBron, but they kept their young core, and then their young core, he possibly helped develop them into all-stars, and, you know, maybe one could have been a superstar, who knows, then you could possibly say it was still successful. But the fact that they have now traded everything that they were building up for now probably a 1 to 2 year window with LeBron, you cannot say anything other than if they don't win a championship in the net with LeBron while he's there, it is just a complete failure. That's just the way it is.
Some fans were saying they should trade him last year.
Yeah, well, you can't trade it. Yeah, you can't. I don't think you can trade him now. I feel like he was tradable with the young pieces because you could have attached some nice young pieces with him and got someone really – well, you could have got the whole team pretty much in return, or you could have got a superstar in return. But I feel like he is untradeable now. You know, at the point where obviously you could trade him, but you probably end up it'd be like a, you know, like a Westbrook trade where you trade Westbrook and you get some absolutely, you know, a Chris Paul that's going to cost you about $100 million and some draft picks to go with it. But yeah, obviously LeBron didn't have his best season last season, and he's got, you know, 38 or 39, what is it, TV shows and movies and all that stuff he's either executive producing or got his name attached to it. So I feel like the LA Lights and the LA kind of off-court thing, probably he underestimated and he thought he could do it all. And that definitely showed when he produced that, what was it, like he did some rap video or something like that. Not a rap video, he did a video with a rap artist, like the night he, like, when he sat out the game, okay, load management, that's it.
Oh, yeah, yep.
Wine on the court, wasn't it?
Yeah, so there's stuff like that that's obviously a huge concern, but ultimately I think all that stuff might be positive in a way, because I think that you might be able to get the best out of LeBron this season, knowing that last season he would have to admit, like, you know, he was all NBA. Well, I remember at the start of the year I said he wouldn't make the all – I went on Instagram or something. I put up – I said LeBron would not make the all-NBA first team. And I got, like, I don't know how, but someone obviously shared that to a LeBron James fan page, because I was getting trolled for, like, weeks and weeks, like, just messages of, you know – just calling me a white piece of shit and everything, you know, all that stuff, which is just funny anyway. It doesn't really matter. But the funniest thing about it was I was wrong, because I said he'd make the All-NBA second team. So he ended up making the All-NBA third team. So, yeah, apparently my view...
That could be too much credit.
Yeah, yeah. People call me crazy for thinking he wouldn't make the first team, but he ended up making the third team. So I think, look, he's not... I don't think he's a top 10 player in the NBA anymore. I think offensively he's definitely top 10. But defensively he's would just be one of the worst players in the NBA. So you have to factor that in. You can't be a top 10 player if you're arguably one of the worst players in the NBA defensively, and I think the stats back that up. So, and I mean, obviously I'm now talking about LeBron a little bit negatively, so you guys are probably enjoying it because of the rivalry the Pacers have had with Miami and LeBron and all that in the past. But it's certainly not. Obviously, LeBron's arguably a top three player of all time, but it's just possibly a little unfortunate that the Lakers have got him at the tail end of his career. If they could have only got him a year or two earlier in his prime. But I think it all comes down to this year. But, yeah. Hopefully they can win a championship. I'd absolutely love it, but I'm super worried, and I'm actually also concerned that Anthony Davis might leave at the end of the season. So, I mean, that would just be a complete disaster.
Yeah, that's probably doomsday scenario for the Lakers. So is that a Lakers tip for the championship this upcoming season, or who do you think can take home the trophy?
Oh, geez. I think the beauty of it is I don't think anyone can actually say who will win it. I think me, I couldn't even, I can't pick a team. And I think that's so good because the NBA's in the last decade or half a decade, especially, everyone would be able to be confident of putting money down on a team that will win it. But honestly, I don't think the Lakers will win, but I think they're one of 10 teams that could win it. I reckon
this is one of them.
Yeah. Oh, Pacers. No. No.
Oh, you got our hopes up here.
No, I think the East is possibly going to be the worst it's ever been in the history of the NBA this season. So I think...
So saying there's a chance.
Well, no. I think if you look at the East, I don't think you could name two teams that got better in the East that were in the top eight last season.
I think Philly's jury's out. And possibly Miami. Possibly. Yeah.
No, I don't think they're going to be very good this year.
I think Philly got worse. They lost JJ Redick, Jimmy Butler.
Milwaukee got worse. Toronto got worse. I mean, Brooklyn got better in the long run. Pacers
got worse.
Much better. Orlando staying consistent. So, yeah, it's...
I think, yeah, Brooklyn's the only team that got better. So... Toronto obviously got a lot worse. Pacers might have a chance for Eastern Conference Finals, but at the end of the day, I don't think they would be able to beat whoever comes out of the West unless it's a Warriors situation where they had a bunch of injuries. At the end of the day, you never know. Pacers might make their way through the NBA Finals. They might be playing the Clippers, and Kawhi Leonard might have done his knee, and then Indiana become the favorites. So you honestly can't pick a winner. But I think that's the good thing about this season going ahead.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time today, Tyson. We've learned a lot about design, and we've been thoroughly depressed by your lack of faith in the Indiana Pacers. So I really appreciate it.
Well, yeah, looking forward to you guys proving me wrong anyway. So, yeah. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Awesome. Yeah. So there you have it. Tyson Beck on the Pacers podcast. We'll see you next week, guys. Thanks for listening.